I was really into the sermon. That's what happened. I briefly got out of it as I was walking down here and realized this might come in handy. This is the attention-getting step. Oh. Shoot low, boys. They're riding Shetland ponies. I thought David wouldn't be able to come up with the Shetland pony song. And he wasn't. But, you know, Louis Grizzard. Many of us who live in the South are familiar with his humor. He died in the mid-90s. He wrote a number of books. He's famous, perhaps most famous, for the saying, if you're not the lead dog, the scenery never changes, which is quite profound. But one of his book titles was Shoot Low, Boys, They're Riding Shetland Ponies. Now, this particular book was about his analysis of life. He really liked John Wayne. He really liked John Wayne in True Grit. And who wouldn't? And so he wrote a variety of things in the book that had to do with people that he considered to have grit. And in this picture is one that's hard to escape your memory, hence the title to hang the lesson on. Imagine John Wayne in his Rooster Cogburn outfit, grizzled old warrior that he was. He has a posse with him of grizzled Western men who just as soon shoot you as look at you. And down in the valley, a bunch of folks riding Shetland ponies. And so he wisely observes, shoot low, boys. They're riding Shetland ponies. What I want to do in this lesson is suggest that the world is up there looking down on us. And that all too often, they can shoot low because we're riding Shetland ponies. Not going to do a lot of damage riding in with Shetland ponies. When we should be soaring high on the wings of eagles. So let's have a look at that and see what we can come up with. Colossians 2, 23:3 paints that picture. It starts by looking at things that people get caught up in, thinking they're being religious, thinking that's really going to help. And Paul says those things might look like they would help, but they don't. In fact, they take us away from the things that we really ought to be giving our attention to. And so he says, so don't have your attention down here. That's not where our thinking comes from. It's not what folks think is wise. I mean, look at how people mess everything up. So he says, look above where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And in that sense, we need to make sure that we do. Now, negative-based religion. The Colossians 2 reading talks about, and this is what distinguishes what is otherwise a lot of overlapping stuff between Colossians and Ephesians. Colossians has this element that's sometimes called the Colossian heresy. And here's what he's saying. You've got folks who, in the wisdom of men, think that religion is don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. There's some things we ought not to do. But that's not the heart of religion. Imagine yourself a track athlete. And you're looking at what you want to do to succeed. And you don't want to shoot low. You want to shoot high. And so your track coach comes to you. I remember when in track I got my first pair of track shoes. It was so cool. Had spikes on them and everything. But here you are, and your track coach comes in, and he or she says, "Don't wear army boots." That's good. You know, that makes sense. "Don't wear military boots. Don't run barefooted. Don't run in your sock feet. Don't run on loafers. Don't have one spike and one tennis shoe. Don't run on tennis shoes. Don't wear flip-flops." Or as they say in New Zealand, jandals. "Don't wear those croc things." How many? Okay. That's all makes sense, doesn't it? Were you going to do that anyway? You're wanting to run a race. Are you seriously thinking about wearing army boots or going barefooted? No. So if you want to run well, you wear the kind of shoes that you wear to run well. And that's why they handed me a box, shoe box, and I opened it up. I wasn't expecting to find house shoes or just socks or tennis shoes or army boots or anything, because it wouldn't make any sense. And so what did I find in the box? Track shoes. Track shoes. One of the things I want us to understand about how a negative-based religion doesn't work, and there are negatives, of course there are, but you see my point. And that is this. Positive covers the negative. You're my neighbor. You're living next door to me. You breathe a sigh of relief because my spraying of Roundup has only done a minimal amount of damage. And you're thinking about what you could do to help me with my yard. And you think, you know, I'm not going to spray any more Roundup on that. And that's good. I appreciate that. You might say, I'm not going to pour gasoline on the yard and light it up. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go over there with a mattock and tear it all up. I'm not going to go, and you know, on it goes. And you don't do any of those things. You don't do any of those things. But you hadn't done a thing in the world to help my yard out. And such is the way of a negative-based religion, and a positive covers it. Whatever we do positively rules out the many negative things that we could otherwise do to avoid something. But avoiding something isn't the end of the story. We're supposed to do something. The Pharisees were famous for making rules that were primarily negative. And they're following along behind Jesus. I mean, they're just like a little train. Here they go. And they're nipping at his heels like a bunch of chihuahuas. And, he's breaking the Sabbath. Oh, he's doing some sinners. Oh, he's meeting with tax collectors. Oh, he's eating with Matthew Levi. Don't do that. What, pray tell, did the Pharisees do? Try to tend to everybody's business and think somehow that made them righteous. The holiest man that ever lived, Jesus, was looked at by those who practice a negative-based religion and they crucified him. There's something wrong with that picture, is there not? And so we don't want a negative-based religion that's don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. Again, there are things we ought not to do. But if those things are swallowed up in what we want to do, if we want to win the race, we're going to get track shoes. You don't have to worry about us wearing army boots to run the race. You don't have to worry about us wearing flip-flops to run the race. You don't have to tell us all those things we ought not to do if we're sold on what we ought to do. And so should Christianity function. Another Shetland pony low religious thing that lets the world easily dismiss us It's showtime religion. In 1 Corinthians 14:26 and verse 40 as well, Paul looks out at the Corinthian church, and they're very immature. That's their hallmark. Consequently, they fuss and fight and divide, because that's what immature people do. They fuss, fight, and divide. It's just when you get ready to meet together to have a service, one of you wants to do this, one of you wants to do that, one of you wants to do the other. Let me do this, let me do that. Why? Because they're selfish and immature. They want to, you know, have their moment. They want to receive, appreciation from the crowd. Now, we have a lot of that goes on in our situation, in our culture, do we not? I remember well reading something on the Facebook post, of course, back when I was in Knoxville. I was on Facebook even then. And it's about a congregation in town that had the reputation, rightly so, well deserved, of being the progressive congregation. And this lady posted something about their worship service that morning. And she said, "The praise team performed better than I've ever seen them perform before. I am so glad I was there this morning, because they were singing and they had the feeling and they were into it." And I'm thinking, really? Is that what the New Testament wants us to do? Look at people perform and talk about how good it was and how built up we are spiritually because some people are doing something for us that we're supposed to be doing for ourselves? But look. Where I voted in Knoxville was our community equivalent of the megachurch. You know, Carnes wasn't all that big a community, so you got to put that in mind. But it became huge. It had gym and football fields and all kinds of stuff. So I go in there to vote. And their stage area was probably 3/4 the size of this auditorium. They've got stuff, lights, places for the orchestra, places for the rock band, places for the choir, places for the this, places for the that. But they got a little bit tiny place up here with a pulpit. I guess at some point you have to preach a little bit. I remembered a conversation that I had with my eye doctor, who was a member there, but who felt like it just had gone too far. But he couldn't get in a worship mood because there's so many things going on. High production value, mind you. They had a board, a soundboard, visual that would, you know, fill up everything up there. But that's the way people are, isn't it? I mean, apparently, because look at how it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And here's the thing. You got to put on a bigger show than the folks down the road. And then the folks down the road put on a bigger show than you. And then, you know, who's going to put on the biggest show? And it's not about showtime. The things that were happening in Corinth were of the same spirit, however, where people wanted to show out. In Matthew 6:1, Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, contrasting the ways of the Pharisees with what religion ought to be, says, and other than the King James, "Beware of practicing your religion before men to be seen by them." And I understand that he's talking about outside the service, but that would also cover inside the service as well, the synagogue. But let's take it outside. Because we can select certain things to do. Because that's what we like, and that's what we want to show. And what does that lead to? a compartmentalized religion. Mark 12:28-34. Jesus has been talking to the Herodians and the Pharisees who have come to him, and do we pay taxes to Caesar or do we not? No, he puts them to rout. Sadducees, well, how about this? Here's this woman, and she's married, and her husband dies, and she winds up marrying seven brothers. They all die. She dies. Whose wife will she be in the resurrection? Jesus points out to them that, one, they don't understand the scripture, and two, they don't understand the power of God, and off they go. Then this fellow, who we find out in Mark, he's a Pharisee, but he's a very learned person in the law. And he's impressed with what Jesus says. And the reason he's impressed with what Jesus says is because he had a completely different view of religion than his fellow Pharisees had. And so he asks Jesus, what is the great commandment? And Jesus gives, in Mark he gives a fuller than is found in Matthew, because he's drawing from the Septuagint, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The others like it is to love your neighbor as yourself. Matthew puts in there, on these two hang all the law and the prophets. Everything's got to go back to that. I was in a low-key Facebook war here the other day, because I've decided I'm old enough to just get out there and say what I want to say, and what are they going to do? And so I do. It's so fun to be old, because you can get away with stuff. And so I put on there, because this person is talking about all the stuff you do. I said, yeah, but everything needs to be centered in loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. I said that because Jesus said that. And he, just in case we didn't get the point, in Matthew we have him saying, on these two hang all the law and the prophets. The golden rule, Matthew 7:12, it says the same thing about that. On this hang all the law and the prophets. And this lady, oh no, I've narrowed the field to 50% of the population. This lady, she comes back and says, are you saying that, because I threw in there the weight of your commandments of Matthew 23:23, they're tithing the mint and dill and coming, and they've overlooked the weightier portions of the law. I chunk that in there too, to show that there's a proportion or a weight. And so she says, well, so what are you going to leave off? Now put in there, when I put my comment, I said, I'm not saying we're going to leave anything off. Jesus didn't say that. This you ought to have done without neglecting the others. I try to be as plain as I can to avoid these kinds of things, but it doesn't work. Well, what are you going to leave off? Lord's Supper, singing, a cappella, and she lists these things. And so again, since I'm old and I can get away with it, I said, I don't appreciate you answering a post that I didn't put on here. Check it out. And I said, and I don't appreciate you suggesting that I'm a liberal because I said what Jesus said. Woo. And she came back and said, if I misunderstood you. Well, yeah. But see, here's that thing. We get so caught up in things that we lose sight of the bigger picture. We can't see the forest for the trees. We got all these things we do. This is the big we, the entire United States of America and beyond. We get caught up in programs and not discipleship. We get caught up in this and that, and we neglect discipleship. The Great Commission in Matthew says, make disciples. So what's hard to understand about that? And we find it fleshed out when we're supposed to be conformed to the image of Christ. Speaking the truth in love, we're to grow up in all things unto him who is the head, even Christ. I mean, this is not a mysterious teaching in how it is supposed to be done. Because if we're supposed to be a disciple of Jesus, of course we're to be like him. Of course we are. And to the extent that we are, we see things his way. We don't get caught up in the minutia like the Pharisees did. We see the bigger picture. And so, one of the things we need to do is not compartmentalize our religion. Because one of the things that does is the stereotypical Sunday go-to-meeting religion, you know. And honestly, it's easy to go outside and just, you know, it's, y'all are behaving so well today. I am too, I think. It's hard to misbehave in here, isn't it? I mean, I'm probably going to be careful about what I say and things like that. But what about when I get out there? I mean, that's where folks see us. Have I compartmentalized it to, oh, I've worshiped. I ought to be worshiping my whole life. This just happens to be a congregating of us so we can do it together. I'm going to think Bible things. I ought to be thinking Bible things all the time. Is it life? Or is it this, 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 or is it this? This and this and this is riding against the world on Shetland ponies. And they're going to eat us alive. Whoops. What have I done? There we go. Traditions of men-based religion. Mark 7, 1 through 9 and verse 13. Mark 7, Matthew 15. What have they done? In wanting to come up with all these rules and regulations like we saw from Colossians 2, where our emphasis is down here on the earth and whatnot. And getting this compartmentalized idea, Matthew 19, not the marriage divorce remarriage stuff, the rest of the story. The rich young ruler comes to Jesus in Matthew 19 there. And he says, what good thing do I need to do to inherit eternal life? Thing? And Jesus says, well, keep the commandments. I have. Well, do this, this, this. I've done that ever since I was a kid. Got a lot of things he's doing. And he thinks, maybe I haven't done enough things. Maybe I need another thing on my list. And Jesus says, in fact, the Jews made up things, hence their traditions. And part of their traditions was just doing things and thinking that's what religion was about. God wants me. He wants you. He doesn't want things. So if we're not careful, we'll misunderstand what he's wanting out of the rich young ruler. Because at the end of the day, in the conversation, he says, if you want to be complete, complete. Go and sell everything. Give it to the poor. Follow me. Oops. Did Jesus ever tell anybody else to do that? Did Jesus ever tell anybody else to liquefy all they had and give it away and come follow him? Not a single person. Did Zacchaeus do that? Even his exuberance of wanting to do all this stuff for Jesus and make sure he hadn't defrauded anybody and given a lot of stuff. He nevertheless realized that Jesus didn't want him to liquefy everything. He wanted him. And Jesus wanted the rich young ruler. But he had a rival who stood between him and the man's heart. And that was his stuff. Stuff can take a lot of form. You don't have to have a lot of it for it to get in the way. Many a number of things, earthly things that we do that come in between us. And we tend to substitute traditions of men. Because they tend to be, let me check this off, let me check that off, let me check this off. I've done my checks. I can go do what I want to do now. It's never that. It's always, what does Jesus want me to do? So, going back, bring it forward for our big conclusion here in just a moment. There's that Colossian situation. a negative-based religion, a tradition-based religion, a me-based religion. The Jews had all kind of problems with the idolatrous people, as they should have. And when Paul in Romans, starting with verse 18 of chapter 1, gets down to the business of showing what's wrong with the pagan world, the first thing he talks about that led to God giving them over to their sinfulness was they made idols, because it's stupid. Uh-oh, I didn't mean to say that, boys and girls. It doesn't make any sense. But you know what the Jews did? Last part of this discussion in the second chapter of Romans. Paul talks about all these things they were telling other people to do. He says, you who teach others, don't you teach yourselves? You preach against idolatry, do you rob temples? Yeah. So you got white collar sin and you're coming down against the blue collar sinners. And Jesus says, it's all sin. It's all the same thing. It's making yourself God. Some people put an image out there. Some people use their rules and regulations. Some people use this. Some people use that. But Jesus wants us to give ourselves to Him. So, there are things we ought not to do. There really are. You know that. Again, if we maximize an emphasis on the positive, it takes care of the negative, but every once in a while we need to come in and say, now wait a minute, this is one of those things we're not supposed to do. But as we contrast the Gentiles with the Jews there in Romans in the discussion that Paul has early on, what he's basically saying is, they do this and you do that, it just looks different. There are things out there that as I fine-tune myself and the things that I do, I might say, well, I don't do that, but you do. That you could easily come back and say, yeah, but you do that. It's a no-win game. It's a no-win game. So, what do we want to do? When John Wayne looks down in the valley and he sees that, John representing leading the hordes of the earthly army against the church. And so, when he looks down there, and he sees us riding Shetland ponies, he can aim low, can he not? And defeat us and dismiss us. And we don't have anything to really challenge people to rise up for the best that's in them and positively live the life of God. Verse 27, Isaiah 40. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God. Wow. That tends to be what we think of God isn't intervening every day on everything and whacking us. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord of creation of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary. And to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. John's looking down in the valley. And he doesn't see Shetland ponies. In fact, doesn't see anybody. Because we're flying up there on the eagle's wings. And if John has any sense at all, he's saying, boys, we better go back to the house. Because we can't deal with this. It's just too much. We need to get off the Shetland ponies. The things that seem wise to men that aren't. Invest ourselves completely, totally, wholeheartedly, all our heart, soul, mind, and strength in the things of God. And soar on the wings of eagles. that he graciously supplies to all who will give their hearts to him. We've been commissioned to go out in the world and challenge it. Shetland ponies aren't going to get the job done. In fact, you know what's going to happen if we do? They don't even pay any attention to us. You going to pay attention to people attacking you on Shetland ponies? I don't think so. But if we're coming high and lifted up in the wisdom of the Lord, and people look and they see light, and they see things that are attractive that we do, we've got a chance to win the hearts of those who are seeking a higher and nobler way to live. If you're not a Christian, invest yourself in that great project. Rise up on the wings of eagles. To those of us who are Christians, likewise. Your sins separate you from your God if you're not a Christian. You need to be in him or his blood is found. By being baptized into him as a believer that's willing to give your life to him, not compartments. Not like the rich young ruler who said, well, you know, I'll do this and I'll do that. Got any other things for me to do? And Jesus said, I want it all. We'll give it all. He'll let us manage it. But he wants it all. Same for us who have made the commitment. If you need to respond to the invitation of Jesus, won't you do so as we stand to sing?